Scripture reading this morning will be Numbers 11, 31, and 32. Numbers 11, 31, and 32, and that's on page 120 in the Pew Bible. Then a wind from the Lord sprang up, and it brought quail from the sea and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side around the camp, and about 2 cubits above the ground. And the people rose up, and the people rose all that day and all night and all the next day and gathered the quail. Those who gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp.
Good morning. Have your Bibles open to Numbers chapter 11, please. We will get there in just a moment. Mike Sobiak, can you hear me back there, Mike? Yeah, I'm going to talk about you, the reason why. A few weeks ago on a Sunday night, he preached for us, and when he got up to preach, one of the kids, I have to say it was actually my kid, said, uh-oh, right when Mike was coming up to preach. And I just heard when David finished singing, somebody goes, yay. So I don't know if that's a coincidence or not. But anyways, it's good to see you all this morning. Before one other thing I want to mention before we get into our message. Speaking of Mike, I do appreciate him as much as I give him grief and a hard time. And he will be speaking next Sunday in my absence as I'm away at Challenge Youth Conference with the youth group. And so because I won't be here next week, I want to say something this week. And that is next Sunday is going to be Donna and Alex George's last Sunday with us. We knew this was coming. I think they've been trying to keep it a little bit quiet and hush-hush, not bring a lot of attention to it. But they have the good pleasure of being able to retire, and they're going to enjoy retirement, be moving to South Georgia. What's the name of the town?
Dawsonville.
Okay, in South Georgia. And I know they're looking forward to that. And I told her this morning, I don't know whether to be sad for us or excited for her. We've gone through that a number of times with other people, but I think it's okay to be both in a time like this. But on a personal basis, I just wanted to especially thank Donna as one of our Bible class teachers, as a Bible class teacher for my children and many of your children as well. She's done a lot of things. She and Alex and Emily have meant a lot to this church over the years, and we just pray nothing but the best of God's blessings for them as they move on. And so I hope whether it's today or next week that you take advantage of the opportunity to express your love and appreciation to the George family as well. What do you get the person who has everything? Have you ever asked yourself that maybe around Christmas time? You have somebody on your list. You say, you know, I'd like to get something special for this person, but I know they have this and I know they have that and I know they pretty much have everything they need, and if they really wanted something, at least something maybe it's within my budget, they could just get it for themselves. And so what's the point of me really getting them anything? Maybe you have faced that dilemma, if you want to call it a dilemma, in your gift-buying experiences. I occasionally have. I wonder if God was asking himself a similar question when we get to Numbers chapter 11. In a few moments, we will talk about this place, this Kibroth Hattaavah, and I don't expect you to be able to pronounce that correctly. I'm not probably pronouncing it correctly. But why is it named what it is named, and what is so significant about it in Hebrews chapter 11? This chapter, as I mentioned earlier, is called Wandering. We are now entering into the part of the story, in the part of the Israelites' journey from Egypt to the Promised Land, in which their wandering is going to begin. Hopefully in your Bible classes this morning, you explored some of the things that take place in Numbers chapters 13 and 14. By the way, if you haven't been a part of our Bible classes, as we've gone through the story, I really want to encourage you, whether you have children or not, I can say for adults and children, we've gotten a lot out of our Bible classes because they have allowed us to explore in greater depth and detail different facets of the story as it unfolds. Our Sunday morning classes do that, and then on Wednesday nights, especially in the adult class, we have a big discussion time, really, where we talk about What is the application of these things in our modern day lives? These things that took place, what seems to us to be eons ago, how does that serve to teach us and to help us in our day and time? And we've had great attendance in our Bible classes. I encourage us to continue to keep that up. But if you haven't been a part of those, please give us a chance on Sunday mornings and Wednesday nights. But Numbers 13 and 14 is really where the wandering is going to begin. And the people, the spies, come back from seeing Canaan. And they say, we just cannot take this land that God has promised us. I know they don't say it just like that. But they see the land. They see the promised land. Those 12 spies get to go into it. And they say, yeah, it is this land flowing with milk and honey. But there's these giants and these fortified cities. And things seem too big, too strong, too many for us to be able to conquer. And from that point forward, their wandering begins. A repercussion of their lack of faith and their disobedience. In many ways, though, Numbers chapter 11 is where we, maybe not for the first time, but one of the first times in a very clear way, we see where the people's hearts are. We see the condition of this group of families, this extended family of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We see where they are in their spiritual maturity, in their confidence in who God is, even though they have witnessed great things that we have talked about so far in the story. Even though they've been delivered by the Egyptians. Even though they were able to cross the Red Sea because of God's miracles. It still isn't quite good enough. When you get to Numbers chapter 11, verse 1. And by the way, one thing I should mention in case you haven't noticed this or it hasn't been highlighted for you. Back in chapter 10, verse 11, we are only in the second year of their journey from Egypt. We will remember this journey as a 40-year journey, but it was never designed by God originally to take 40 years. It shouldn't have taken 40 years. So here we are in the second year of them having left Egypt. And when you get to Numbers chapter 11, verse 1, we see a theme that unfortunately is going to be repeated far too often during this time of wandering. Numbers chapter 11, verse 1 says, "And the people complained in the hearing of the Lord." And the people complained. Now, as you start Numbers chapter 11, we're not told exactly what they're complaining about, but we can imagine, we can put ourselves in their position and think, what would you be complaining about? Well, there are certain things that would come to my mind. One, I'd be complaining about this packing and unpacking. You know, here we are traveling in these tents, and we've got the cloud by day and the fire by night. And you don't always know, hey, the cloud says it's time to move. The fire says it's time to move. Let's all pack up, get our belongings. Let's head out of town and go to the next place as we're journeying to the promised land. You've been doing that for more than a year now. That probably gets a little old after a while. I have a feeling some parents would have been saying, you know how hard it is to keep all these kids under control, to keep them entertained, to make sure we know where they are and keep all their belongings. You know, we've got to do all this stuff, packing and unpacking and moving. We don't know when it's going to happen, what day, what time of day. Yeah, that probably would have gotten a bit old after a while. When are we going to get there and what's it going to be like? You start to see them wondering. It sure doesn't seem so far like it's going to be better than what we had in Egypt. And then there's the diet, the food. That is something we're told that they complain about. Look at Numbers chapter 11, verse 4. "Now the rabble that was among them had a strong craving. And the people of Israel also wept again and said, 'Oh, that we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our strength is dried up and there is nothing at all but this manna to look at.'" The children of Israel, they've been fed by God's manna. And that's been going on for a while. And they start to say, you know, think back when we were in Egypt. Now, yeah, I realize we were made slaves by the Egyptians. And I realize that they expected just impossible things out of our building projects. They made it harder and harder for us to get those jobs accomplished. Oh, and yeah, they did want to kill our babies. But don't you remember the onions? Those were the good old days. Now, this is the first time in human history when people complained about not having to eat their vegetables. It's pretty pitiful. You think about the people's mindset. Here we are, we have been delivered, we have this promise waiting for us, and all we can think about is what we used to have that we don't have anymore. What they used to have was a life of misery. Exodus chapter 2, God hears their pleas, their prayers. God hears their cries. These people were desperate because their condition had gotten so bad in Egypt, and now they have deliverance. But now that they have deliverance, they have already forgotten how good freedom feels. If you keep reading chapter 11, who else complains? Moses complains. We see some of his weakness and frailty as well. He complains to God, and God allows him to. God hears Moses' complaints. But it just reminds me, isn't complaining one of the most contagious things among humanity? Doesn't it seem to spread like wildfire among us? You think you got something to complain about? Well, let me tell you about my situation. You think your lot in life is bad? You don't know what it's been like to live like me. And before you know it, we just got a bunch of people comparing, complaining. You complain, I complain, they complain, everybody is complaining. And what are we going to see for 40 years for the Israelites? A people who just complain a whole lot. And so you go back to this question, what do you get someone who has everything? Now let's be honest. There are some things the people don't have right now. We've already acknowledged that they continue to dwell in tents. They don't have what you might call a home for themselves, something with four walls that's a permanent structure that you can point to and look at and say, yep, this is mine. I worked for this. I earned this with my sweat, with my time, with my money. This is mine. No, they don't have that. They don't have a land. They don't have property yet. They are nomads. They're moving. They're on the move. Yeah, there's a land that's been promised to them. But the land on which they dwell, it continues to be temporary. It's always changing, and it's certainly not their own. And yes, the buffet lacked variety. God gives them manna day after day, and yeah, even when I eat the best of stuff that I enjoy, if I eat it over and over and over again, sometimes that gets a little bit old. So yeah, they didn't have everything. But what has gotten us to this place in the story? What do the people have? Last week, God gives them a set of laws to lead them, to regulate them, to oversee them. And one thing we talked about last week is the purpose of God's laws, whether it was the law that was given through Moses or the commands that we continue to live under today. Why has God given us those things? As we said last week, He wants us to live. He wants us to thrive. He wants things to go well for us. God has given them a set of laws. They have leadership. Moses and Aaron. Moses didn't feel confident about his ability to lead the people. But God said, I'm going to be with you, Moses. I'm going to be with you all along the way, and I'm going to give your brother Aaron. He will help serve as the spokesperson, your mouthpiece, if you will. The people had leadership. The people had peace. The people had protection. They didn't enjoy those things in Egypt like they do now, even though they're out in the middle of nowhere. But what did they have more than anything else? They had God in His presence. God was with them every step of the way. And time after time He tells them, I will be with you. I am with you. My presence will go before you. And if you need food, I'll put manna on the spot. If you need water, it can flow from rocks. I will see to your every need. You have everything. But it wasn't enough, was it? It wasn't enough. And on this occasion, their minds and their hearts, all that it could be focused on was the food that we once had in Egypt and how we don't have it anymore. And so that brings us to Numbers chapter 11, verse 31. Page 120 if you are using one of the pew Bibles. Numbers chapter 11, verse 31. By the way, I mentioned earlier, when the people are in Egypt and they're crying out to the Lord for deliverance, God hears them. You get to Numbers chapter 11, the people are complaining. Guess what? God hears them. And here's what happens. Then a wind from the Lord sprang up, and it brought quail from the sea and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side around the camp, and about 2 cubits above the ground. By the way, 2 cubits is 3 feet. So picture that, 3 feet of quail outside the camp everywhere. These people who've been complaining about food, here's how they respond. The people rose all that day and all night and all the next day and gathered the quail. Those who gathered least gathered 10 homers. If you have a footnote, we're told that a homer was about 6 bushels or 220 liters. So the person who got the least got over 2,000 liters, we're told. And they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. Can you picture that scene? It's sort of impossible in some ways, isn't it? Here you've got all this food as far as the eye can see, knee deep. The people have been complaining about food. They've been complaining about all kinds of stuff. Moses has been complaining about taking care of people who are complaining. And so God says, you have everything, you want more, and guess what I'm going to give you? Exactly what you're asking for. The people see all this food. They run out. Let's get it all. Let's get as much as we can. The person who got the least still got a ton. Can you imagine as people are just going crazy, scattering all over the place, picking up all this food? Can you imagine some of them saying, God is so good. Look how God is blessing us. God has given us this abundance. He's heard our complaints. He knew that that manna wasn't good enough for us, and now He has just made it rain quail. Life is good. God is good. God be praised. Was God blessing the people here? No. Nah. He was allowing them to experience the curse of their greed. He said, if this is what you want, this is what you're going to get. Verse 33 says, while the meat was yet between their teeth, before it was consumed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck down the people with a very great plague. Therefore, the name of that place was called Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had the craving. If you look in your footnote, the name of that place literally means graves of craving, graves of lust. Not everybody died, but some certainly did. Why did they die? They died because of their own greed, because of their lack of gratitude, because of their unwillingness to see how good God had been for them over and over and over again. And in spite of God's goodness, how do they respond? Complaints. It's never good enough. We have it all, but we're not satisfied. God gives them more, than could ever satisfy them. And I have a feeling after they had gathered all that food and eaten whatever they could consume, because certainly they couldn't have eaten it all, there came a point where they said, you know, that wasn't enough either. That's the way greed works, isn't it? That's the way ingratitude works. We realize as much as we want more and more of something when we get it, that's not enough either. That leads me to some practical applications of this passage for us. The next question on the overhead. What do you crave? You see, it's easy to look at this as just a story and look back at it as something that took place over 3,000 years ago, where you had a big nation of spoiled brats who had God leading them, God protecting them, God overseeing them, God feeding them, and say, how could these people be so ungrateful? This is the most pitiful group of people I've ever seen. But what is it that we crave in our lives? What is it that tempts us to say, yeah, I know I've got God, and I know He has seen me through so many things in my life, but if I just had this one other thing right now, and for some of us, it might be financial security, or job stability, or better health, or a happier family, or being more popular among our friends, or more liked by the world. We could make a big long list, couldn't we? Of all the things, if we took all of us today and said, what's the one thing when I'm really tempted that I crave, that just tugs at my heart? If I just had that, that's what would top off the life experience. Maybe for those of us with children, we're tempted sometimes to say, you know, if for my kids, if they could just have this one thing, if they could just experience or do this one thing in life, whether it's success at school or success on the ball field or getting them the right spouse or just setting them up to have a life of health and happiness, if they could just get this one thing, that would just top it off for us. Do you really think that is true? Do you really believe that if you just had this one more thing, that would get it done? I can only speak for me and for what God has revealed. In my own experience, every time I think there's one more thing, you know what there is? There's one more thing after that. Or if there's that one more thing and I get that one more thing, now I want two more of those things, right? And then I want three more. And there's never enough. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 15. When I think about greed, I often think about that proverb. It says, the leech has two daughters. Give and give. That's the truth, isn't it? Give and give and give and give. You know what God gives the people right here? He gives and He gives and He gives and He gives and He gives. And they realize we are cursed by our own greed, our craving, our lust is what is killing us, even though life was always right theirs for the taking. They had nothing to complain about, but they had everything to complain about too, didn't they? And so when you fast forward a short time later to chapters 13 and 14, even in spite of this rebellious, cranky, complaining people, you know what God still does for them in Numbers 13 and 14? He still takes them to the promised land. He says, here you've been complaining about food. Here you've been talking about how it was better back in Egypt. Now I'm going to let your spies walk into a land that has milk and honey and all the fruits you could imagine. All the stuff of this life, but more importantly, the life that I've promised you. And how do the people respond there? It's not good enough. It's too much for us to be able to take this land because we've got to face some things here that are difficult. We might as well go back to Egypt, and in some cases, we might as well have died in Egypt. What do you crave? And so the final question, what's your life going to look like? What's your life going to look like when you get what you desire? Whatever that one thing is, to top off your life experience, whatever the one thing that tugs at your heart more than anything else, when you get that, where will you be? What will your life look like? And will it still belong to God when you get that one thing? Where did it get the people in Numbers chapter 11? It sent some of them to an early grave. Now, I'm not here to tell you that if you desire something beyond God, it's going to end your life immediately. In some ways, you might even live a longer life on earth because of the things you crave. But when you get what you yearn for the most, will you still belong to God? In many ways, that is what this part of the story is all about. And the people are going to end up wandering for 40 years because what they desired more than anything else, it was not God. Graves of craving. It's a sad story. And as we go through the story, not everything we are going to talk about and read about is going to be the most uplifting. Because the reality of the story is that sometimes people have made very poor choices. And we see that unfold in the 40 years of wandering. But we today, we do not have to wonder. These things have been written for us so that we may learn by them. And so that we may crave, we may yearn, we may desire more than anything else, not the things of this world, but the God whose presence goes before us. The God who says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. The God who says, in spite of the wilderness where you are, in spite of the evil that's around you, I will feed you, I will quench your thirst, I will protect you, and more than anything else, I will save you. Is that enough for us today? Or do we yearn for something more? If God and His Son Jesus Christ is everything that you know can fulfill your life, we're about to sing an invitation song in which God has invited you. God doesn't force Himself on any of us. God did not force Himself on the Israelites. Instead, through His Son, He offers an invitation. Come to Me, all you who are weary and heavy laden. And what will He do for us? He will give us rest. In Jesus is the perfect rest that not even the promised land could have given the Israelites. He has come to this earth. He has tabernacled among us. He has died for us. And He has risen for us. So that we can have the best life of all. If you need to come to Him this morning for salvation, for cleansing, for a return to allow Him to lead you, we encourage you to take one of these front pews, or you can meet with an elder in the library after worship while we stand and sing this song.